first couple verses. And so we're going to be covering that today. But before we go to Genesis, I wanted to mention some of the strange ideas that the world has about creation. These are from the pagans, of course. Sumerian Christopher Sirens, this is from ancienthistory.about.com. Sumerian mythology frequent asks a question explains that in Sumerian mythology there was originally a primeval sea within which the earth and the sky were formed. Between the heaven and the earth was a vault with an atmosphere. Each of these regions corresponds to one of the four gods. In the Asian, Pangu took an axe to break forth from his confinement in a cosmic egg. So we all come from an egg, right? We're all a bunch of eggheads, all right? Okay. And when he died, he became the wind, mountain, land, and rushing waters. Well, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Japanese cosmology. This is from another internet site. JapaneseCreation.html is what it is. Earth and heaven created from a divine egg. A Mesoamerican, Cotoqui, got pregnant by an obsidian knife through which she produced her one legitimate litter of moon and stars. Oh, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? When she got pregnant shamefully a second time, she gave birth to the god of war, Huitzilopochtli, however you pronounce that, who murdered his siblings. Wow. There's Germanic. In the beginning, there was a great void. Ginnungagap, G-I-N-N-U-N-G-A-G-A-P. A fiery region developed to the south of the windy and icy region to the north. Together, they produced chaos, and out of chaos sprang life. Oh, that also makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Unlike the Bible, which indicates an all-powerful being, God, you know, created the heavens and the earth. And of course, we know the Bible gives a completely different story. So the title of today's sermon is The Creation Story. We're going to cover the story itself, not just Genesis 1-1 or Genesis 1-2. By the way, you could actually give a whole sermon on that. But we'll go back to Genesis. And let's look and see how the Bible contrasts to the pagan myths. In fact, there's one myth that I think one of the American Indian tribes have, that man came from ants from underneath the ground. That really makes a lot of sense. Some people do act kind of like ants, right? It's just amazing, you know, what they have. All right, let's go to Genesis 1-1. And I think it's important that we understand about Genesis. One of the problems as we go into this, by the way, though, you're having about six chapters of Genesis that are describing millions of years of Earth history. I mean, we know there's a gap, which we'll explain here in a little bit. But we go back, and we don't actually know all that much about what happened before Genesis 1-2. And when it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the universe. Now, some of the commentators try to say that what this is a summary statement. No, we would think this is a statement of fact. In the beginning, I went to town. After that, I went to the grocery store. You see? Or something like that. Or in the beginning, I went to Kroger's and then I went to CVS. Okay, that's the way we would understand it. Whereas they would look at it like that's a summary of the whole thing. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And again, that what we look at it, it is completely different from the way much of the world looks at it. All right. So, again, unfortunately, too, you have people who try to describe Genesis as in a theistic evolution attitude. That Genesis is just like evolution. That you can make a case, some people call it, or try to make a case, that the Genesis record records what the geologic record is. I'm going to show you the problem with that. And by the way, it's very easy understood why it is not a problem. All right, so in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And now you go to verse 2. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. Though this indicates, now a lot of the younger creationists, by the way, try to say, well, this is the way the earth was dark. Does that make any sense? You know, when you construction people work on your construction, you don't take some nails and boards and that and then put a bomb in them and blow it up, do you? See the point? That makes a mess, doesn't it? Something happened here. The Bible also indicates, 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 33, God is not the author of confusion. Why would you start out in confusion? That's another thing to keep in mind. The Big Bang, by the way, that scientists say, doesn't really conflict with the Bible. In fact, in some ways, it's very problematic for evolutionary scientists who don't believe in God. Because the Big Bang says there was a start. In fact, I think it was until the 1960s, I was looking it up on the books I was reading, and about Genesis, most scientists believe that the universe was eternal, that there was no beginning and no end. And it wasn't until this one man started looking at the redshift of the stars and all of that, that decided, well, it looks like there was the universe started at a spot. So the one thing for us is very important to understand is the Big Bang doesn't mean that is a problem. It's not a problem for us. But it is a problem for the young earth creationists, which is unlike us. We don't have a problem with that because there was some period of time. And by the way, we all understand that this was the time when Satan, the devil, was apparently thrown down the earth. I don't want you to go necessarily. You can go to Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28 and Revelation 12. I'm going to write some references. Isaiah 14, Ezekiel 28, and Revelation 12. It says that Satan was going to rise up again. In fact, that is the beginning of the tribulation, which Mr. Klein was talking about in the sermonette here and being ready. That's what causes it, apparently. One of the things is there's a war in heaven. And he's thrown back down to the earth. And the book of Revelation says he has a short time. And by the way, this is one of the strongest arguments, I think, for what we call the gap theory, which the church has done. And Mr. Armstrong, when he first started studying, the gap theory was very popular in the world. Unfortunately, in recent times, it has lost popularity. Some of the people, Hebrew scholars, are trying to say that doesn't match what they think the Hebrew is or whatever. So what's happened is, sadly, in the world today, you've got two camps. You've got those who really don't believe in Genesis. Some of them don't even believe Adam and Eve existed. Some of them believe in all kinds of pre-Adamic creatures that were who knows what. And then you've got the others. And by the way, they can be atheists or they can be theistic evolutionists. So theistic evolutionists try to say, well, God, in fact, I'm reading a book right now, that this man, basically what he's stating that is it's a form of theistic evolution, even though those varieties. If you ever want to look it up, look up in Unger's Bible Dictionary, and you can see all the theories of Genesis. They are just all over the place. Okay? But there's good reason for us, and one of the biggest and most powerful points for the gap theory is Satan's rebellion. I've actually seen young earth creationist literature where they've tried to say that Satan fell during the days of creation. Because they have a problem with that. But the logical time is here. Something happened. The earth was. And by the way, if you want to look it up, and there's several places, you can find places in the Old Testament where the same word is translated became. The earth was. Could be translated, and there are several scholars that actually pointed that out. In fact, I think, remember, Lot's wife became a pillar of salt? Same word. So, there are examples that this word is used. So, it became without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. And this, again, if somebody asks you about that, 1 Corinthians 14:33, God is not the author of confusion. If you're going to create something, you start out with, nails and boards and cement and whatever. And you don't just mix them all up. See the point? So that's something to keep in mind. So there was darkness on the face of the deep. Now I want to go to just explain some. Let's go to 1 Timothy 6. Should we be surprised that the earth that people don't believe in Genesis? And by the way, this is where the younger creationists are right, I believe. They point out that one of the major factors for atheism is evolution. Before Darwin, they didn't have any way of explaining it. There were kind of guesses on that. By the way, though, the Greeks actually believed in a form of evolution. So it's not a new theory, but it was new in the scientific world in the 1800s when Darwin wrote it. And I also find it very interesting. It was also written at the time. Remember the Civil War that was fought? That was terrible war because for the first time you're starting to see these new, you know, guns and, you know, all kinds of powerful killing machines that they had. And, you know, science was making progress. And, you know, it had trains. You had even oil. They were starting to drill for oil and all of that in the 1860s. It's sad how bad it got. But also that meant that the common man could get the Bible. And I find it very ironic that, you know, we know who leads this world to Satan, that he caused Darwin's theory of evolution to come around, what, 1850 or 60, right in there, right in the middle 1800s. And to discredit the Bible, because they want to go without a creation. All right, so let's go to 1 Timothy 6 and verse 20. Notice the Apostle Paul warned about this. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 20. O Timothy, guard what was committed to your trust, avoiding their profane and idle babblings and contradictions of what is falsely called knowledge. Now, the old King James says science. And I think that applies today. Because they had those people then who were trying to apply certain ideas. Now, apparently, this is directly referring to the Gnostics. But remember Jesus, and I didn't put these scriptures in my notes today, but remember Jesus prayed and he said, I thank you, Lord, that you hidden these things from whom? The wise and the prudent, and revealed them to whom? The babes, the simpletons, the people that just want to read the Bible for what it says. And you can go on. The Apostle Paul says, not many great. He says, Apostle Paul talks about too in 1 Corinthians. There are several places the scriptures clearly indicate that this idea will come. 2 Peter 3, where it says, in the last days scoffers would come. Now let's go to that. That's an important scripture. We covered it, and we'll cover it in the Bible study. I think we may have covered that in some of them already. But that's a very important scripture. 2 Peter 3, verse 2. Notice, let's start in verse 1, 2 Peter 3. Beloved, I now write you this second epistle on both which I stir up your pure minds by way of reminder that you may be mindful of the words which were spoken before by the holy prophets and commandment of us and the apostles of the Lord and Savior, knowing this first, that scoffers will come in the last days. We shouldn't be surprised. Remember Jesus said when he comes, would he find faith? Why? Because you've got all these things. And also, that indicates the passage of time. That's another thing it indicates. That, you know, if something happens real quickly. I don't know about you. You ever had something come in, it doesn't come in the mail, and you start to worry about it? And as time passes, you worry more? And that's the way it is, isn't it? You say, well, is it ever going to come? And unfortunately, that's a natural thing, because the apostles at first didn't even write down the Gospels because they thought, well, we don't need to. Christ is going to come. And it's obvious. That's why you start to get 50 or 60 A.D. and you see the epistles and especially the Gospels are written. All right, back to Genesis 1 then. So the earth then became without formless and void. And there's powerful proof because, again, there's no other place logically in the Bible to put Satan's fall. That's a very powerful argument for it. And now, here we go. Now, again, like I mentioned, there's two schools of camps in the world today, basically. We would be in a great minority. Once in a while, I found a book where somebody will say that. I did find one I've got where it talks about the gap theory. But most of the time, you won't find that in the literature. They're just, the earth is only 6,000 years old, or it's millions of years old, and Genesis really doesn't mean what it says. Okay? So let's notice here now, this is a big problem for the young earth creationists. Okay? Why? Notice what it says. Let there be light. And God divided the light, and saw the light was good, and divided the light from the darkness. Oh, wait a minute. Not only is there light, the light is divided from the darkness. But if you'll notice, it's not till the fourth day that the sun and moon are created. How can you have light without a sun? Now, they will say, well, of course, God can create light, and that's true. But look at, if you look at it like Genesis, I know some people start to look at it from God's point of view. Genesis written from what point of view? Man's. If you were a man on earth today, or in that day, this is what you would see. Apparently, then, Satan's rebellion made it so black, you might not have been able to tell even hardly the difference between the ground and the air. Some kind of a state. We don't know. Whatever it is. And by the way, this is geologically, I can tell you, in my studies, I've seen this, is very clear that the earth in the past was hit by disasters like you can't believe. In fact, the evolutionists talk about it. They talk about the destruction at the end of, certain, the dinosaurs are one example of that. How the dinosaurs were destroyed, apparently, by a meteorite, they think. And other things. So it's very interesting how they themselves, indicate that there have been destructions on the earth. And so what's happening here is God is starting to open it up so you can see light on the earth. You can't tell so much, maybe it looks like a dusk or something. But you can tell, notice, and that God divided, and notice in verse 5 then, and God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, so the evening and the morning were the first day, which indicates a revolving earth. Say, evening and the morning were the first day. And those who try to say that there's only 6 days of creation, and there's no gap before that, they have a problem here, where we don't. Because we know the sun is there already. And so that's what's going on here. So he called, and by the way, some people will try to say again now, and I'm reading a book now where the guy says, well, these are thousands of years. In fact, it's called the day-age theory. That's one of the popular theories in the evolutionary sciences, that each day is some kind of geologic age. Well, that adds problems too, as I'm going to show you. Because what they will do, they say, well, man is created on the sixth day. Man is the epitomization of God's creation. However, they have a problem. So let me get to this now so you can see it. If you notice, the third day, let the waters be gathered together, verse 9, let the waters be gathered under the heavens in one place, and so the dry land appears, and then God says, let the earth bring forth grass. That's the third day. See? Oh! What do the evolutionary scientists tell us about their theory of the origin of life? It starts in a primeval sea somewhere. Something like Craig Harper's Pond in July. Except there wouldn't have any, there's no life. It wouldn't even be the green stuff on it. I guess some kind of amino acids or something get together. As we used to joking, lovesick amoeba. They got these ideas. I don't want to get into that too much today, but the origin of life is one of the greatest problems for evolutionists. You know why? Because when you look at life itself, well, you can see, look at a monkey, they got something that looks like hands, they got feet, they're mammals, and there are similarities, aren't there? So you can say, well, maybe something like that happened. But when you come to the origin of life, they have a real problem. There are no steps. In other words, You can't have life without reproduction. You can't have life without little escalators. Remember some of the videos I've shown you? We've shown you? There's no intermediate step. You can't do that. You can't make this argument. And so it's a real problem for them. And in private, they will admit. In fact, Behe and others say, when you get it in public on National Geo, oh, yeah, we've got it all figured out, and it came out, and all of this. And by the way, there was a famous experiment called the Miller-Urey experiment in Chicago in the early 1900s. And this supposedly proved that life originated in the sea and lightning came down and he put some electricity on and he got some amino acids. Except he forgot to add one thing. Oxygen. And we know geologically now, and we can prove from the geologic record, that oxygen was present in the early atmosphere. Oh, guess what happens to that experiment when you add oxygen? You hear it of the Big Bang? This will be a little bang. It blows up. And see, they can't add oxygen because they can't add it also because it ruins the experiment. And you've seen some of these things, you know, where they, even in health, where they talk about oxygen doing certain things to life, by the way, in certain ways. So it's a real problem for them. They don't have any explanation for the origin of life. Obviously, there's a God who designed it. It's just so clear. All right, so God saw the light, He divided from the darkness, and the evening and morning were the first day. 24-hour period. And by the way, let's go to Exodus 20. You want verification? I know one book I was reading, it says, well, this is just a creation story. It's just somebody wrote it down and all of that. But the Bible verifies a creation story, doesn't it? From the Word of God Himself. Exodus 20 and verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, for in 6 days shall your work. And then notice in verse 11. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them. So, you know, people who make these arguments that these are long geologic days are making a very serious problem. There's just no way. It's not going to work. And, you know, by the way, so again, and even before the sun and the stars, how can you have grass coming first? See? All right. So, and there, notice in verse 6, and let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let divide the waters from the waters. Apparently, the earth was just a terrible mess. Some people have actually called it Satan's flood. It was very interesting, brethren, when I went with Carl McNair years ago to Montana. And they have a place up there where dinosaur eggs were buried by, guess what? A volcano. You know, it was so interesting to see these dinosaurs. And it's also very interesting to go to Dinosaur National Monument. I think it's in Colorado, right across the border from Utah. I've been there. Guess how these dinosaurs died? At the edge of a river. Recognize that story? If it's Satan's flood, possibly they were destroyed before Adam, by the way. The old book of the church used to have dinosaurs before Adam. No question about that in my mind. There were dinosaurs probably before Adam. And they were destroyed by water. In fact, it's something like 70 to 80% of all the strata on the earth is called sedimentary, which means it was underwater. And so somehow, you know, these things are made, you know, by that. And in fact, you don't even have a fossil unless you have water. How many buffalo were killed in the 1800s? On Kansas and Oklahoma and all those places, huh? Montana. How many fossils do you think there are of them? I doubt if there's any. See? You don't get a fossil in the first place unless you do what? You bury it. You know, and, you know, animals that die and live on the ground, their bones just deteriorate. Eventually, they're gone. I mean, there are all kinds of things I don't want to get into too much, but there's something called polystrate trees. This is a coal mining state. I don't think there have been any found here, but in Nova Scotia, some other places, they call them a polystrate tree. See, the evolutionists say this, that all these coal mines were made over millions of years of time. And so they gradually bake up peat moss or a peat bog of some sort. But they have a problem with that, because there's what they call polystrate trees. They've been found in several places. I can show you pictures of them, by the way, if you'd like to see them. They go up to, you know, 20, 30, 40 feet of strata. How long, you can ask Greg Hart, how long does it take for a tree to rot out, huh? 100 years, maybe? That's millions of years, folks, they're talking about. Hundreds of thousands of years. What it points out is these trees were buried by some kind of flood. Probably, some think, floating mats during the flood, or during the floods, plural. And then it sinks to the bottom. And the trees, by the way, they've shown from Mount St. Helens, that's exactly what happens. That Mount St. Helens blew up some of the trees, and trees were in this lake. And what happens is the roots go down to the ground, and they settle into the ground, and it looks like they're growing there. When in reality, they were part of the explosion from Mount St. Helens. And so that matches. See, the evolutionists try to say these coal mines will make over millions of years. And it's really sad. You know, when that happens, because they don't looking at the facts. Not only that, in Utah, you can find dinosaur prints in the mines. Well, that also, how do you make a footprint? How's a footprint preserved? It has to be flooded. Otherwise, the water comes around and washes it away. There's no question about it. It's so easily stated here and easily seen. And by the way, one of the most interesting points, too, that I've seen about the geologic record and Genesis here is I read one of the books one time, and it was they were talking about Montana, and they were in shale. And you know, a lot of the time you have the shale oil they talk about, okay? And Utica shale, we have it here. Well, they were finding these dinosaur bones in shale. And it started to rain. And guess what happened to that shale? It turned to mud. Now think about this. If there's thousands of feet of strata from before Adam, and the flood comes, and for a year the earth is covered as water, what is that going to do to most of that lot of that rock? It's going to melt it, isn't it? It's going to dissolve. Just like the shale that you see them getting all this natural gas from. And it's what it's going to do is it's going to sort it. And that may be the answer to some of the geologic record we find. In fact, I've been there in Grand Canyon. You can look. There's one strata they have in Grand Canyon. They're right together. And they're straight. Straight as an arrow. Except there's supposed to be millions of years of separation between them in a matter of inches. The problem with that is, if you're sitting rock for millions of years, and even if it's rock, and it rains, what happens? What happens in California when it rains a lot? You get, what, ruts. It should be uneven. It's not. It's straight as an arrow. You would think, if you didn't have a geologist telling you that it was millions of years different, you would think that it was made in a flood. All right, so again, that's something to keep in mind as you see. So what you're seeing here, see, the firmament is divided. The earth is a mess. And apparently there's water all over the place. You might not even be able to tell the difference between the ground and the atmosphere. Some kind of a plasma state. We don't really know. Again, there's something to keep in mind. There's six chapters of Genesis to describe millions of years of time. And, Genesis is not a scientific book in the sense that you're, measuring the speed of light or the power of gravity, but it is a historical book. That always gets me to say, Genesis is not scientific. No, it's not a scientific book like a laboratory in physics or whatever, but it's history. There's complete difference. How many times has science actually messed up our view of history? One example is the John F. Kennedy death, right? We got a lot of science. You got bullets, people go there and experiment and they show arrows, all this. How many theories are there about John F. Kennedy's death? I don't know about you. I'd like to have the money from those books, wouldn't you? You'd be a millionaire, wouldn't you? The Kennedy death has probably had more death. And this is science. Does science answer the question? I'm sorry. It doesn't. In fact, in some cases, science kind of confuses the issue compared to eyewitness accounts. And again, that is, sadly, is an example of that. All right? All right. So let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, from the waters. And God made the firmament and divided the waters. And so then you see them. And this was the second day, evening and the morning. Remember, a 24-hour period. And that's one of the good things about the gap theory. The Bible is literal, yet Adam and Eve are literal people. A lot of people don't even believe that Adam and Eve exist. I know we had a geologist in the church, and you kind of wondered, did he even believe they existed? Well, he thought that Adam and Eve might have existed, I think, with other humans, hominids or something. These weird ideas that come up that actually diminish the power of God, by the way. One of the ideas of pre-Adamic man is the idea that somehow God was creating and experimenting with man, but God is a supernatural, all-powerful being. And by the way, He created angels who are higher than us. They existed before men. They're a higher class of being. What do you think about humans? Say, that doesn't make any sense, logically. It just doesn't. All right, verse 9 then. And let the waters be gathered under the heavens in one place, and let the dry land appear. So, this indicates that Satan's rebellion was associated with some kind of flood also. And God called the dry land earth, and gathered together of the waters He called the seas. And God saw that it was good. And then God said, let the earth bring forth grass. I was reading one book recently. It was really sad. This man was trying to justify the day-age theory. And he was saying, well, the Bible says there was life in Precambrian. Now, so you understand what I'm saying here. We know that the first hard evidence of trilobites with hard bodies is found in what's called Cambrian. The evolutionary scientists believe that before the Cambrian then, there was a Precambrian time when there were bacteria and life was evolving, single cell, without any registration of it. There are several problems with that, by the way. One of them is this. I can show you scientific articles that show there was pollen in Precambrian strata. You know what pollen comes from? Wheat, corn, right? Grass pollinate your plants. That means that the plants evolved before the amoeba did. Or at the same time, that doesn't make any sense. But also, it makes sense if what I was talking about in Montana is that somehow the geologic record got all mixed up by a flood that dissolved the rock, a lot of it. That's what makes sense. See, but this one, and this one, I saw this one book, and you know what he did? He takes this verse here, and then God said, let the earth bring forth grass. And then he took out the word grass, and then he put in brackets, life. And I said, boy, I don't remember that. I was reading the book, I said, I don't remember it saying life. Oh, grass is life. Oh, but wait a minute. If you admit that grass comes before the land animals, any evolutionary scenario is gone. Because they believe life started in the sea. And then, remember the amphibians, and they come out, and they crawl out of the sea. That's their idea. Some of the fish that walk around, they'll say those are the precursors of creatures coming out of the sea. There are some fish that do that. You know that walk on land? And, of course, you got your crocodiles and all these others that are both. All right? So that's what you find in the books. I just want to write you the guy a letter. Will you please quote the Bible for what it says? And don't put a word in there where a lot of people are read that. Oh, yeah, the Bible says there was life on this day. No, it doesn't say it at all. It says grass. Now, grass is life, of course. That's what he's interpreting. But he's misinterpreting the meaning of the whole verse. In other words, life started on land, which is right away the day-age theory is shot. It's gone. And the idea that these are long geologic ages that are being described here, it just doesn't make any sense. Okay? All right, so notice that herb yields seed and green fruit. Now, you've got a problem now if you're day-age theory too, because you've got millions of years, and you got the next day, and then you got the sun coming out. How does life go without a sun? Oh, if a 20-hour, 4-hour period is no problem. There are lots of ways to look. You ask questions. Because a lot of these scientists, I say they're great science and they come up with ideas. They don't ask the questions of where Genesis is coming from. And also, they don't equate it with Exodus 20, where God himself tells Israel, I made the earth in 6 days and 6 nights and rested on the seventh. And by the way, one thing I want to mention, and I forgot to mention it earlier here, how did we get Genesis anyway? How do we get Genesis 1? Well, they're apparently on clay tablets. I want to skip ahead a little bit here so we cover this point and don't forget it. Notice in Genesis 2 and verse 3, apparently Moses knew the history of the earth, probably talked to God about it, and there were clay tablets that probably, just like Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, preserved their story, probably on some kind of tablets, by the way, not just verbally. I think we would understand that. Notice in Genesis 2 and verse 4, this is the history of the heavens and the earth when they were created. In fact, the evolutionists will point out, people say, well, these are two accounts of creation. And they conflict. They don't really. I don't want to go into that today. They don't really conflict, but some people try to say that. And then you go on, if you go on then to chapter 5 and verse 3, you'll see that these are apparently different, tablets. Genesis 5 and verse 1. This is the book of the genealogy of Adam in the day that God created man. It's almost another creation story. It goes back to the beginning. Apparently, these are colophons. And their colophon is a way that you end something. And apparently, this is a way of showing you that you're going to a different tablet or something. And you can go on and see that. By the way, chapter 6 and and verse 9. Notice this. And this is the genealogy of Noah, which indicate it's like a chapter break. In fact, I'll get to it later more, but the King James people really messed up when they put the King James Bible out. And see, remember, originally the Bible had no chapters. In fact, did you know that some of the original writings, there were no spaces between the words? Yeah. There are no commas. And that's something to keep in mind. There weren't even any spaces between the words in some of the ancient writings. So you'll keep that in mind. But it's obvious that the chapter should have started in Genesis 2 and verse 3. That's where the break should have come. In Genesis 2 and verse 4, rather. This is the history of the heavens and the earth when they were created in the day that God made the heavens and the earth. All right? So you can see what these are. These are apparently some kind of clay tablets that were preserved. And this is writing, and Moses knew from talking to God and all of this, probably was instructed by God what to put in. We don't know everything, of course. We do know that these were constructed and put together by Moses. In fact, if you look at your title, the first book of Moses called Genesis. See, but Moses wasn't there with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob either, was he? Hundreds of years had passed. So somehow he had to get that record. All right. So let the earth bring forth grass, and the earth brought forth grass, and herb yielding its seed after its kind. This is one of those sad stories the evolutionists do. They'll say, how could Noah put all these millions of species on the ark? And so they got put in everything from John's little kitty cat to the lion of Africa, to the leopard of Africa. All of those species are on there. Wrong. You only have to put one pair of cats. Sorry. And by the way, it's a proof that you shouldn't eat unclean food. Seven pairs of clean animals. So if Noah decided he wanted a pig for lunch, no pigs, right? Because there are only two of them. You see the problem? And that's another thing. Remember, a lot of the Protestants say the law didn't come into effect until Moses. Exodus 20, Leviticus, Numbers. Wrong! The clean and unclean animals are from the beginning. In Genesis 6, Noah could not have eaten any unclean animals on the ark at all. Or we don't have pigs. Whatever. I wish he'd have left off the mosquitoes, though, don't you? Some of the bugs. Whatever. But anyway, that didn't happen. But notice, after its kind. So, just like human beings. Even the evolutionists will talk that we came from some kind of Neanderthal, whatever, man. And the varieties come after that. And you can look at all the animals of the earth. The horses, crocodiles, the lions and leopards. Who knows? In fact, what they got, a combination of a lion and a tiger. It's called a liger, as you can breed. I mean, so those are not separate animals yet. But by the way, sometimes the evolution forget, too. Most of the animals or creatures on earth are in the ocean. Nothing they do sometimes. They include all the fish. Well, does Noah need to bring a fish on the ark? Sorry, no. See? And by the way, I want to get off of this too much, but do they have to all be adults? No. Maybe they were young. Maybe they hibernated. That's another story, okay? But this word kind is very important here because it does, a cat doesn't give birth to a dog or a mouse, you see, which is exactly what we find in nature. But those kinds spread out. And by the way, let me give you an example of how creatures develop. In South Africa, the Europeans, the Dutch and the English, especially the Dutch, they brought their cattle from Europe down to South Africa. Guess what happened to them? They died. Because they couldn't adapt. And so what do they do? Well, they finally realize, we better take these, Zulu cattle. We better take some of the cattle that are here who have adapted to this area. So it's so easy. After this kind is a very important point here because, explains what God has done on the earth. And notice, and the tree that yields fruit, whose seed it shall be according to its kind, and God saw that it was good. This describes exactly what we see in nature. And so the evening and the morning were the third day. And God said, let there be lights in the firmament. So apparently then, remember, Genesis 1 is written from man's point of view. At first, you couldn't even see light. There was no light anywhere on the earth. Absolutely dark. Then God starts to remove the problem from Satan's rebellion, and you can actually see some light. Enough, apparently, till day and night. Then, now we're going on to the point that the atmosphere is completely cleared, and you can get light that can help the plants grow and all of that. It's a process that God goes through here. And so the evening and morning, and let there be lights in the firmament, and divide the day from the night, and let them be signs. And let them be for the lights in the firmament of the heavens, and to give light on the earth. And so it was so. Then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night. And he made the stars also. But they were there. And notice the word made is not even in the original Hebrew. The stars also is all the way it reads in the Hebrew. If you look the word made, it's in italics. And God set them in the firmament of heavens to give light to the earth and to rule over the day and over the night and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. You ever notice when you get stressed? I know down at Orange Beach, it was a great place to go, but I had this seniors banquet to take care of. Seniors, I'd never done that before. You can ask Cheryl, I was a little nervous. I think it was the same day that we had the activity. I got up, you know, and I was a little nervous, so I walked on the beach. And you know what happened? I found myself relaxing. I mean, you know, go for a walk in the woods sometime. I mean, we live in these cities. How can you ever be relaxed in New York? You know, how many have been in New York, sir, Cheryl and I? You been in New York? Yeah. We won't go downtown again, will we, Cheryl, unless we have to for some reason. I mean, in our cars, I guess. I would take a taxi or the subway or something. That was the best way to go. But to go in the car was, well, let me tell you, very stressful. You wonder how people live there. In fact, when we went there, in order to have a parking place, one of the men in the New York church had to park his car in the spot. And when we came, we got the spot. That's how bad it is. That's where church is. That's not even New York. That's in Queens or something. Or is that part of New York? Anyway, Queens is a part, whatever, of it. But it's just amazing. So when God said it is good, isn't it interesting, brethren, how nature calms us? Good. You know, it's like even your little kids and, you know, a child. Isn't it amazing? In fact, do you know that they've found in seniors' homes? You know, one of the best ways to help the seniors? Bring in some little kids. Never forget years ago when Mom and Dad were in Waterford, we bought Rachel and Preston, about Megan and Rowan, and they were running around all over the place. You know what Mom and Dad told us afterwards? The seniors just love those little kids. Something about it, isn't it? The innocence of a child. Okay, there are also other times, aren't they? They can be troublesome, too. We won't go into that right now, okay? But there are times that they're just wonderful. All right, so you have the fourth day then, the third day, and evening and morning with the fourth day. The fourth day then, fourth commandment, too, by the way, the Sabbath day. Way to remember that. And God said, let the waters abound with the abundance of creatures. Now you come to the fifth day, and on the fifth day, long after, if you want to look at geologic ages, plants are around. Now we got life in the sea. This is the first sea life. But the book I read, the guy perverted the scriptures. I'm sorry to say that. He twisted them to say, put the word life, which is not even there. See, that's why this day-age theory makes no sense. It does not match Genesis. And evolutionary attempts to match Genesis with evolution do not work. Because you believe in God. And man's always trying to look for a physical way of explaining. That's one of the problems with evolutionists, too. They want to see something physical that they can use to explain it. There are times it's just a miracle. Our lives, brethren, are absolute miracles. They are. All right, so let the waters abound with the living creatures. And it's very interesting there, the words that are used there. And giant creatures it could be, I think, even. And let birds fly above the earth. And let the face of the firmament of the heavens. So now you got the birds. And God created great sea creatures. There it is. That's the word I was looking for. And the whales and whatever. And every living thing that moves, with which the waters abounded according to their kind, and every winged bird according to their kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters of the earth, and let the birds multiply on the earth. So the evening and the morning were the fifth day. So you've got 2 days later that life finally comes in the sea before it's been on the land. And then before it has been on the land. And God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind. Notice, cattle and creeping thing, and the beasts of the earth according to its kind. And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth according to its kinds, the cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And so now we come to the epitomization of God's creation, man. And then this is very interesting, too, because all of a sudden, brethren, you can get doctrine right out of Genesis 1. Notice what it says. And God said, let us. Ooh, wait a minute here. Us. See, the Trinity says there's only one being. When you say the word us, I don't know about you. I think of Cheryl and I as two different beings. We're one in marriage. And I think of you married couples the same way. Let us. Now, the Trinitarians will say, well, this is the Trinity. Well, it doesn't say that at all. We know of two beings, and I gave the sermon on Trinity a few weeks ago. You can go over that if you'd like. But let us make man in our image. You notice how many times your kids look like? I know my Cheryl was saying, saw a picture of my dad and said, guess who you look like? Your dad. You know? And it was actually one time one of our daughters, when she got older, she's in her 30s or 20s or 30s, said, this is terrible. I'm acting just like dad. Because we not only give our image to a certain extent, what else goes down to the next generation? Our temperament, doesn't it? And John's family is one of the better genes is our math gene. Comes from my dad. My mom was also very intelligent. But my dad, he's the one that was really good in math. He never went to college. In fact, he graduated from a little tiny school in Rockford, but he was always good in math. And by the way, on the gambling thing, they would not let him count the cards sometimes because he'd start counting them. He was really good because at blackjack you can count and you can figure out what the chances are. Then, and he was doing that in his head. Finally, they do things so you can't do that anymore. Well, they get several decks of cards is one of the ways. There's so many decks of cards. All right. Let us make man in our image. Oh, this is another thing that contradicts the ideas of the world. Remember years ago when we had the God Is booklet? We talked about that in the Trinity, and God is everywhere but nowhere. God says He made us in what? His image. We look somewhat like God. Now, we don't have the character of God. That's the difference, by the way. God has the character, and that's what we're hopefully developing, godly character. But in the physical image, there's no question about it, what the Bible says. According to our likeness. And notice, it says, let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the earth, over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. Think of the difference between this Genesis and the stories I gave to you before of these really ridiculous ideas of a cosmic egg. Not only does it say God created man, but it gives something that we see so dominant today that's getting to be a problem, isn't it? Human beings dominate the earth. Our rifles and our guns can kill just about anything, including whales with harpoons. I mean, there isn't any creature. Some creatures go extinct almost because of us. The buffalo is an example of that. They almost went extinct because of the dominance of man. When he gets on the scene, boom, we dominate. It's a statement of truth in Genesis that's really a proof of the Bible. Completely different than the pagan myths. All right. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over the cattle, and over all the earth and every creeping thing. So God created man in His own image. In the image of God, He created them. Male and female created them. Now, it goes on in Genesis 2 to further expand on that story, how that Eve comes from Adam's rib, that God used Adam's rib to make Eve. In a way, with genetics today, we kind of understand that, don't we? Because of the genes, DNA. But again, God made us in His image. God blessed them and said, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over every living thing on the earth. And God said, I've given you every herb that yields seed, which is the face of all the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields, so it shall be for food. Also to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, which is their life, I have given every green herb for food. So we all appreciate good vegetables, potatoes, and all of that. And God saw everything that he had made. Indeed, it was very good. In the beginning, Adam and Eve were sinless, weren't they? But they had the capability to sin. And again, but let's get back to what Revelation and Paul even says. Jesus Christ was crucified from the foundation of the earth. When you get to Genesis 3, this wasn't a surprise to God or a shock. It's like taking, as I mentioned, little kids and put them in a room and give them one toy. Will they fight over it? Give them two toys, they might fight over. You ever seen that? I've heard that. You give them two toys, and one wants one, the other one wants it. So God, you ever told somebody, don't go there? You ever heard these stories that kids were told not to go to a cave? What do they do? What's the first place they go when they get a chance? God told Adam and Eve, don't eat from that tree. Remember, also, they were very naive. He knew what was going to happen. You know, and unfortunately, some in the world, they have the idea that Satan got in there and messed up God's creation. Wrong. Christ was crucified from the foundation of the world. He knew that we had to go through this process. And that's something for us to understand when bad times come, brethren, because there are things that we learn, don't we? Bad times teach us things. We've learned in the church a lot of things from the bad times we've had. All right, but God saw everything that was very good. Even Adam and Eve, they were perfect at that time in the sense that they hadn't sinned. They weren't perfect in the sense they were going to be obedient to God because they had a choice to make. All right, now here, as I mentioned earlier, this chapter should not end. Chapter 2 should start down in verse 4. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and then it says, and on the seventh day, God ended his work. Well, again, we go back to what the Protestants say about the Ten Commandments, that there were no Ten Commandments until Moses in Exodus 20. I can tell you one commandment there was, the seventh day. Notice what it says about the seventh day. And on the seventh day, God rested from his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Now, when does the Sabbath start? Does it start at Moses? No. Notice in verse 3. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. When we keep the Sabbath like we're doing today, brethren, we are commemorating what? Creation. That's what Exodus 20 says. When the Sabbath is a commemoration of the creation of God. And that is a very, very important point. And so, and sanctified it. And notice, and he rested from all his work which God had created me. Now, does God need to rest on the Sabbath? I don't think so. But why did Christ come? Christ came to set an example, didn't he, for us? God set an example for us by resting on the Sabbath day. And again, it's very clear from the book of Genesis and Exodus that the day is a 24-hour period, evening and the morning. Notice the evening starts, so we start the Sabbath when? At the beginning of the evening. And then Exodus 20, as I've already read, verifies and solidifies that. And you can go through other parts in Genesis and see the other commandments are also well known. Like, thou you shall not commit adultery. And Joseph, remember, said, I shall not sin when Potiphar's wife tries to seduce him. And all of that. It's so clear. Those commandments were there from the very beginning. And even the clean and unclean meats that I mentioned earlier in Genesis 6, there they are. And this is one of the most important parts of the creation story. That God gave us the Sabbath to rest, and so we point back to creation. And that's something to keep in mind, brethren. It's very, very important that we recognize that. And we do that. And again, let's remember now the creation story makes sense. Actually, it corresponds well with what science tells us. Science tells us, the geologists tell us, that there have been several catastrophes in Earth's history. And that they, even themselves, they admit there are times that life has been blotted out. Hello? Satan's rebellion. Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2. The creation story of Genesis, brethren, makes sense. And when you understand true science, it also matches with science. Let's keep in mind the truth of the creation story in Genesis 1.